I first heard of you on Twitter.
Okay.
A guy called John Burns, he's a journalist, and he loves you as well, do you know him?
Oh, he's the Sunday Times.
He kind of mentioned your name, and I hear Kevin Barry, and I think of 1916.
Yeah.
And I was like, who's he? So I kind of got into him. And since then, I've got really into reading different Irish writers and stuff like that, and short stories. Would you have anyone you can alert me or Kevin Barry fans to that we may not have heard of?
That you may not have. Well, there's actually the old English story writer V.S. Pritchett, who kind of died about around the turn of the millennium, and he was very famous in his day, and in like up to the 60s, 70s, 80s, he was a very famous story writer. But he's one of those writers that's kind of gone out of fashion since his death, you know. And I hope he doesn't fade. He's really strange and odd and funny.
I
definitely recognize a kindred spirit in him, because you can tell he's a story writer who works primarily from the ear, and he works from speech and the way people speak and what they show and hide in their speech. Mm. So V.S. Pritchett is always one I mention. In terms of Irish story writers, there are many. Desmond Hogan, by no means obscure, I suppose. He's very held in high regard, but his stuff isn't that widely available. So Desmond Hogan is one, and of course people like William Trevor as well. They're great story writers, and I'm still turning it out, you know, in his 80s.
Brilliant. Okay, I shall look up those people. I've heard of William Trevor, but the other two, no. What did you read when you were little, and did you write at all when you were little, or what did a child read?
Well, what used to read? I suppose, I mean, you know, Famous Five and Secret Seven and all that, but I think a book that sort of kind of threw me to the wall for the first time then would have been Wuthering Heights, which I read when I was about 10. Because there was a copy lying around the house that one of my sisters was doing for school for her inter cert. And I remember being off school in bed with the flu and reading it and being completely transported from a suburban housing estate in Limerick and been set down on the Yorkshire moors in the early 1800s. And I think realizing for the first time that the power a book could have. And I still love Wuthering Heights, actually. I still want to figure out how it works, you know. So then, in terms of writing, I would have had the standard kind of teenage poetry phases, awful, you know, stuff. But my background is I worked as a freelance journalist all the way through my 20s, and was kind of half-heartedly trying to write fiction. Not in a disciplined way. But I became more disciplined as I got towards my late 20s and into my 30s and realized the amount of work that's needed. That it's such a craft that takes a long while to start getting anywhere with. You have to put the years in. And wrote a lot, you know, before I published. And it's so important that you have to read so much and you have to write so much before you start to get anywhere. There are horrible exceptions of people who can just do it straight away and come out in their early 20s with a very good novel. But that's unusual. So I was quite a late starter in that my first book of stories came out when I was 37, which isn't a spring chicken. But you know, we got there eventually anyway.
Okay, cool. You probably ask this question a lot. Why do you write?
Good for nothing else is a kind of a short answer. When you're writing fiction as well for a while, as the main thing that you do, an odd, weird and kind of lovely thing happens. It stops becoming the thing that you do and it becomes the thing you are, you know. It almost becomes, it sounds vaguely repellent to say this, but it becomes like a bodily function and you don't feel quite well. If you haven't written in the day. And it is an obsessive thing, and you have to be selfish when really, you know, this is the main thing in your life, above everything else around you. And that is a very selfish thing, you know. I write because I can't imagine doing anything else. I was always, you know, going to do something in this line, I think. Increasingly with the work, I've been doing little bits of theatre and writing film scripts, and I love to work with actors and to write for actors, and I think my stuff lifts off the page for actors, so as it goes on, I can see myself doing a lot more in that end. as well as hopefully continuing to publish books. So it's yeah. But that seems to be something that's happening now for me over the last year or two, I think. Where I'm very often thinking about actors when I write.
Yeah. Your stories, I think, depict, when I read them, I think, oh God, Ireland is an awful place. Irish people are horrible. Not many of them you kind of relate to or like, I suppose. How do you really feel about Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, it's strange. The stories in my first book were mostly written in the UK when I was living in Edinburgh and in Liverpool and when I was away. So there's almost a kind of, I wouldn't say a rose-tinted view by any stretch, but there is a kind of a nostalgia or something in that work, I think. I mean, it drives me mad sometimes, the country, you know, and I can't wait to get out of it. And like in the winter, when in South County Sligo, it's kind of dark at 4 o'clock and the cloud is down for weeks on end, I often bolt and go off and arse around Spain or something for a while. If I can afford to, just to get some light. But it's, I mean, in lots of ways now, I mean, Ireland is very different as you travel around. I like being in the west of Ireland, and I grew up in Limerick at the tip end of the Shannon, and now I live near the top end of the Shannon. And when we get back towards Sligo, if we've been away, and when I cross the Shannon River, I always do feel a kind of, home kind of a thing. So it's, I think it's a great place if you can get frequent sort of jailbreaks out of Ireland, you know. If you can get away a bit, it's fine. I wouldn't be anywhere else.
Cool. And you'll probably ask this question a lot, but how do you, I suppose from the beginning when you start to think of an idea, how do you construct a short story?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's a good sign for me if the characters are quickly talking to each other on the page, and if I can hear them in that way. I mean, they're very troublesome short stories. It's a very tricky form, and most of them go wrong on you. You know, most stories that I try don't work out, and I abandon, or they're just, I can tell they're not great, and they're just sat there. So I try to write a lot of stories and the hope of getting some good ones.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important to treat it like that, as a real craft kind of a thing. And try, like, I aim to write 10 or 12 stories a year on the basis I might get 2 good ones, you know?
Yeah.
And someone said, Ray Bradbury, the old sci-fi writer, said once that it's impossible to write 52 bad short stories in a row.
Yeah.
So if you write one every week every year, you might get a couple of good ones, you know?
I want to prove you as a writer then. How do you get better?
I think it's very important, actually, when you write, not to just do things you're good at. So if you're really good at dialogue and you know your dialogue works, have some stories that have no dialogue in them. You know, don't coast on the kind of things you're good at, and in that way you'd be challenging yourself all the time, and pushing yourself and pushing the work into areas where it doesn't naturally seem to fit. But you never know until you really push. You know, so I think don't get into set habits so much and try different things all the time with the work.
I've noticed as well it's kind of hard to locate you. I got you through your agent,
right?
But you're not on Facebook, maybe you are. Twitter, blog, I mean, is there any reasons that you're just not into it?
I mean I'm online a lot like anyone, but it's just such an easy way to procrastinate if you're a writer, to you know, update your blog or tweet or whatever. So it's just to keep that kind of temptation out of my way. And I have found that, like, an iPhone, a smartphone, is a really dangerous implement for a writer, because if you reach to your bedside table first thing in the morning and start looking, you're immediately in that online space, and it's kind of a flitty, impatient place where your attention goes quickly, and that's not a great place to be trying to write fiction. So anytime I've talked to writing students or anything like that, I say to them, you know, buy an old-fashioned alarm clock for your bedside table, and your email and your tweets won't have gone anywhere by 12 noon. Just try and keep away from it for the first few hours. Because if you go into that online flitty space, it's not a good, I'm sure you, as a teacher, you know, it's not a good place for the brain to be if you're trying to create something. It's a huge problem for writers, and we talk about it all the time now about how to keep away from the fucking internet, you know. It's definitely an issue, like,
it's good advice, actually.